Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Plant Sex Week here in Tacoma, Washington. Because apparently it's Plant Sex Week. You know how I know?
There's plant sex everywhere?
Yeah, because there's plant sex everywhere and nothing, none of my... Apparently, I'm part plant and my mucous membranes are horny because they're all just leaking fluid the whole week. And yesterday, I thought, you know, it's nice. It was, the weather's good. Everything's, you know, I had a nice day outside. And so we thought we would end the day of the roof at my office because my office has a little roof patio.
Right on.
And so I grabbed my inverter and an LED light and stuff like that. And we went up there and I had a miserable time because my all I would do is leak fluids from my mucous membranes because the part of me that is a plant was apparently very aroused by it. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. This is Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I am roughly 89% Sam Mulvey. Apparently that other 9% is cottonwood tree.
The remaining 2%. 89 plus 9.
Oh, right.
You get another 2.
I wanted to say 92.
Ah.
The part of me that's plant isn't very good at math. And and Becky, how are you?
I am less plant than you, but
yeah.
Certainly.
Well, you just
some part plant.
You have a sort of a consistent cannot breathe thing going on.
I do.
Don't you? Yeah.
I sacrifice my asthmatic airways to be able to cuddle cats.
Well, you have things you can take for that.
Indeed. And yeah. I have taken all of them and still
okay.
My mucous membranes.
Yeah, okay. Too. Every time I have a medical problem, Becky's got to be like, yeah, I also suffer from it. I also have
less,
this.
Less than
I
you.
Also have that. Yeah, no, everything that ever happens to you, I got it worse. What is that, Becky?
Anything you can do, I can do better.
Or worse. Yeah. How are you, Dave?
Any weekend in which the Sounders beat the Timbers can't be all bad.
Yeah, but I thought rivalries were crap.
Yeah, well, it's not that they're crap. They're just not fun. Like, they're too stressful. Actually, I found out, because in my show, both Carol and I admitted that we find rivalry so stressful.
Do you like the transparency of my plug there?
That was smooth.
Thank you. Yeah.
Handsfreefootball.com.
Yeah.
at handsfreefooty on Twitter. Follow us. But, no, we admitted that, like, rivalry games are just so stressful that they cease being enjoyable. There's just too much involved. The line Carol used, which I thought was brilliant, was, it is playoff pressure without playoff payoff.
Yeah.
Which is exactly...
You guys, I don't know how much I want to go into this, because I've got many fine things to say about the concept of a rivalry since I participate in one, but...
Right.
For me, it's just great when I meet somebody else who's on the other side ever, because the rivalry for me is 1,700 miles away. And so it's like, yeah, we're technically at war, but the war is far away from here.
It's nice to see somebody who even gets it.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And it's just it's just a reason to sit down and talk about stuff. But man, soccer takes their rivalries very seriously.
They certainly do. Although yeah. I did find that...
Like, to the point of not fun.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Although Carol and I agreed that this time, once we got in the game, the stress was off just because it was 85 degrees and the sun was in our face for two straight hours. Like, yeah. It was too hot to be stressed. It was just like, okay, we're just rolling with this. Yay, we scored a goal. We're going to roll with this.
Teach me that space magic. Too hot to be stressed.
Yes.
I can be, I have like the deep cycle, long duration stress engine. It doesn't matter how sunny it is or how hot it gets.
Is there any way NASA could use that to help propel us to Mars or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine I could be on...
Your head in the back of a spaceship to power everything.
Yeah, being buffeted into plasma by the photosphere of the sun. I'm stressed about it, Dave. I'm stressed. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842.
Just discover a perpetual motion machine? Put Sam in a stressful situation to power the machine?
That would suggest that I survive the process, Dave. I don't know that. That seems a little unlikely. I'd like to thank Mermaid Athena from Florida. Really? She's an atheist mermaid, and she performs at events as a mermaid. So she gave to Peggy's Challenge, which is Peggy's Challenge. The listeners of Ask an Atheist, to help us keep the lights on, you can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Click the yellow button on the right-hand side. Goes directly to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. And I also have a Patreon, and I've been posting to the Patreon lately. I really need a... What I need is a commercial, really, is what I need there. Something, you know.
Yeah.
Take it off my hands. Mermaid Athena, eh?
Yeah, Mermaid Athena's actually written to us before because at one point, I think the Discovery Channel did something about do mermaids really exist? And then NOAA, NOAA, had to come out and say there's no evidence that mermaids exist because people started thinking that mermaids existed. And Mermaid Athena said, I am a mermaid and I can say that I don't exist. But I kind of like it. If you're going to be a fanciful, fantastic creature, be an atheist, right? Because
yeah, why not?
I am inhabiting the persona of something that I know is not true or that I don't believe there's any evidence to support.
I think it's pretty cool.
Right on. I was just going to say, I actually do remember that documentary as being one of the nails in the coffin for the entire educational programming networks, in that they advertised the hell of this thing and did this like very serious documentary on the reality of mermaids and then finished it with a tiny disclaimer that says this is all for entertainment. It's all crap.
Right.
And a lot of people got really mad about that.
Well, to the extent that the government climate agency has to, you know, come out and say, there's no evidence of mermaids and we are the ones who monitor the sea.
Yeah, but they also say there's no evidence of SpongeBob SquarePants. So
now that we might be taking up, you know, some disagreements on.
We have some emails. First, we'd like Jim from Facebook, who writes, there's not been a year in my lifetime in which freedom of the press in the USA has been more relevant to me, nor one in which I feared for that freedom more. Support responsible journalism and fact-checking, and fight against misinformation and alternative facts.
I will note that Jim does put alternative facts in quotes, so there's he is not a believer in alternative facts.
Yeah, if you the fight against misinformation and alternative facts suggests that these are things that should be fought. I think Jim makes himself very clear in this.
You are absolutely right. And this actually comes in light of World Press Freedom Day, which was about 2 weeks ago, where we celebrate the freedom to disperse information, to publish, to investigate, to... It's a subset of freedom of expression. And it's really critical at this time, not just in places where we think of, you know, state censorship of written materials and things like that, but in, you know, the U.S. also, when you're looking at, you know, how does information get dispersed? How do you know what to believe? How do you teach people to have a critical eye to believing what's printed?
You see, I mean, this would be a much better motto for The Washington Post, like a free press means a free world.
Not that democracy dies in darkness.
Yeah.
You're still on that.
Not a boot stomping on your face forever, which I think is what their motto is now, right?
Democracy dies in darkness.
No, I'm pretty sure it's a boot stomping on your face forever. Back me up here, Dave.
I don't read as such.
See,
like...
Dave agrees with me. Okay, it is democracy dies in darkness. Actually, if you want to see like the press at its hilarious best, I don't know about the accuracy of anything that they're reporting, and to their credit, they are also saying this is like deeply, you know, leaked information or deep sources. We can't really verify it either. They're very upfront about it. But if you want to see sort of the Venn diagram of dystopia, comedy, and good journalism, Washington Post is kind of where it's at right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Because Washington Post, was that one of the ones that was bought out by News Corp?
No.
No, okay. No, it was Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
It was the Washington paper. Okay.
Yeah.
It's almost so bad. News Corp is so terrible that when I hear they bought a newspaper, I almost write off the entire city. Like, hey,
yeah.
They bought the Chicago Sun-Times. All right, no news out of Chicago is trustworthy.
Did they
anymore.
Buy? No, they didn't.
No, I'm not saying
no,
they did.
No, the Tribune Company is trying to buy the Chicago Sun-Times, which is kind of funny if you think about it.
But it's just one of those, like, if I hear once News Corp bought something, it's like, okay, just you can't trust information from the city anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe that's not the best way of going.
Yeah, you may want to revise that. It's not like News Corp comes in and buys all the citizens of that city. It's not like they have to,
you can't prove that.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure, because they bought the Wall Street Journal. I'm pretty sure the people who do all the trading on Wall Street haven't had to report to the News Corporation recycling chambers for transmutation into a nutrient paste. And I think we would have heard about that had that happened.
Newsprint is people.
Yeah. Good job.
But I think that you bring up an important thing here in terms of when we get jaded and we say what's believable and what's not believable. And when we talk about, you know, a certain large percentage of Republicans, Democrats, doesn't really matter how you're associated, saying, I don't trust fact checkers. You know, at what point do you say I don't trust fact checkers versus I'm skeptical and want to verify the information for myself? And I think that there's a lack of trust in something that's printed that can be really healthy and awesome, right? Because if a lack of trust can be viewed as negative, but it can also be viewed as skepticism. And when you say, I want to verify, I want to investigate that, I want to look at it with a critical eye, I want to try and examine the bias from which it comes, and then that can be really enlightening.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Like I said, this is I was a little afraid of how this was going to turn out this year politically, but between the New York Times, not the Wall Street Journal, so don't, okay. Yeah.
Safe.
Right. And the Washington Post. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening with journalism. It might all be false, but at least people are trying to fight the fight, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And to that end, Jeremy from Facebook writes, another great episode. Just to let you know, as a longtime listener, I am happy with the recent turn towards discussing politics. So another, if you wonder why we keep reading these comments on the air, even though we generally have just let, like, positive comments just sort of go normally. Yeah, occasionally we'll talk about
it. Thank you. They feel good. Like, don't stop writing them. We love
them.
Yeah,
please. No. I would not be alive if it weren't for these things. I survive merely on the goodwill of others. Not food or anything, clearly, if you look at me. You know, I don't want to get too self-congratulatory, but now that we've taken this turn into politics, I do kind of need this propulsion. I need this attaboy, and I need to refer to it.
Right.
Because we've taken a turn that I never expected this show to take. You know, because I thought, I've always, a political show is really probably what I'm best at, and a political show is probably the thing that will kill me.
Right.
You know, it's the thing that will just suck all the life out of me. So it's always... having something where I can sort of dip into politics and dip out of politics, I think is the way to go. It's like, I am not your host for Democracy Now for 10 years, you know, or something like that.
I think also the
Daily Show, maybe.
the nature of the discussion surrounding what it means to be an atheist in the U.S. has really changed in the past 7 years. You know, when we first started, when we're talking about what it means to be an atheist, it's, hey, let's look at it in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And you can be an
atheist. Not necessarily in a vacuum, but while acknowledging the outer context, zooming in on the parts that are... The key components in the atheist machine, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And now there's more interest in terms of looking at atheists and a different variety of atheists. And we are a variety of atheists that has strong feelings about the political climate that's going on right now. So I think that it's completely appropriate. And one of the reasons that it is appropriate is because the nature of discussion about what it means to be an atheist in America has changed.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have too much to actually add there.
That, yeah.
It's just pretty concise.
Yeah, Becky's good at summing things up, putting a good point on it. I absolutely agree, and like I said, I'm good at politics. I pay more attention to politics than most people I know, with a couple of notable examples, for mainly the same reason, so that we can all crack jokes about it. But I've always wanted to do it, but, you know, an atheist show, I was never really sure that this was the venue for it, because I've seen other atheist shows that I really like dabble in politics, and then they become, you know, sort of screeds. or not screeds, whatever the audio-visual equivalent of screeds are.
Rants?
Not so much rants, but like statements of intent where it becomes about the politics.
Right.
When we're talking politics, it is about the politics. But when the political discussion is over, we're talking about, but even in the political discussion, I'm still trying to connect it to atheism, why this is important to us. And then when the political discussion is over, we are done with politics. It doesn't bleed into over into right. everything else.
Right.
I don't know. Like I said, I'm still playing with the format. And I have a lot of extra time to play with the format now, so we'll see. But let's get into some news. Good news. Except not. A Portland commuter train passenger fatally stabbed two people and wounded a third on Friday after the victims confronted him for yelling slurs at two women, one of whom wore a hijab, according to witnesses. Jeremy Christian was charged with aggravated murder, attempted murder, second-degree intimidation, and being a felon in possession of a restricted weapon. The attack came on the eve of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Christian was known for shouting racial epithets, giving the Nazi salute, and threatening to shoot police officers who attempt to disarm people at a Portland free speech rally in April, where police confiscated a baseball bat from Christian but made no arrest. His public social media posts are riddled with speech decrying Bible-thumping, hillbilly, child-mutilating, Semitic, monotheist, enslaved, Zionist tools, and fascist, mask-wearing, coward, Antifa, comma, expletives. Commie expletives, not comma expletives.
And that's one.
He's not a grammarian.
Line.
Yeah, that's one.
That's one whole insult.
Can you set that to some sort of? Because that's straight up blank verse, isn't it?
Have you seen a kind of almost apropos of nothing? But a long time ago, when Sarah Palin gave her retirement from the governorship of Alaska, gave that random speech.
Yeah,
and then some show. One of the late night shows brought in William Shatner to perform that speech as beat poetry, and it suddenly made a lot more sense. Is that what this is?
It might be.
It needs bongos?
No.
I think someone gave him the idea of beat poetry, he misinterpreted it, and brought a baseball bat to the scene. So they did actually confiscate that baseball bat because they said, you're at a rally, and that's fine, but you're intimidating people with a weapon. But they decided not to make an arrest. And there's a lot of, videos that people have captured that are out on social media, that are out on different blogs. And you can see various times when the Portland police basically say, we're going to try and de-escalate, calm him down. There's some rumors that this gentleman had suffered a brain injury or head injury at some point and maybe wasn't most cogent of thinkers. And it's bringing up a lot of issues of do you look at someone who is being persuaded by what seems to be really violent philosophies and try and, sort of root them out and arrest them, or do you try and make fewer arrests, try and de-escalate situations, get people to just kind of like go home, go away. And this is an unfortunate circumstance where no one had made an arrest prior to this. Most recently, the guy has convictions in the early 2000s for kidnapping and different things like that, and it resulted in the deaths of two individuals who by all witness accounts were trying to stick up for two women who were being bullied. And it's a really sort of unfortunate and painful look at the different kinds of consequences for how we police our individuals who might very well be mentally ill or have head injuries, but who are also being persuaded by this really violent rhetoric.
Absolutely. I have this argument, as an aside, I have this argument in my head, and I want you all to tell me that I'm wrong, because people are labeling this white terrorism, and for the purposes of making a point, I want to support that. I do. But I always thought terrorism implied organization. I mean, the whole point of being very clear about labeling this terrorism is because when people think terrorism, they think Muslim.
Right.
And they think, it's this sort of hidden racist angle. And to get away from that, I think, is an incredibly important point, which is why I'd have no trouble, for example, calling the Klan a terrorist organization.
Right.
Or the Oath Keepers, even, a terrorist organization.
Weird.
Yeah, I know. Right? So I understand the point. But for example, the guy who shot up alone, shot up Parliament a few months ago.
Or tried to run his car up and then.
No, not the most recent one. The one before that. Because the most recent one, it looked like it was a group of people trying to make that plan, where the one before it, it was just one guy. And they were calling that, and he was a Muslim dude, and they were calling that terrorism. And I'm like, isn't that really just one guy going nuts?
Right.
And this is one unhinged dude who didn't like being challenged when he was being a Shazbot head. and so he up and stabbed people. I mean, this is a hate crime. This is racism. This is everything terrible. But I just...
It doesn't have the political intention.
Oh, it's got politics.
Well, it's got politics, but yeah. It doesn't have the specific political intention that a terrorist act usually has. And that's more of a... I see exactly where you're coming from, because yeah. It's like terrorism has almost evolved to mean violent act committed by somebody who recognizes Ramadan.
Right.
I mean, which that isn't what it is. Terrorism is a very specific.
It's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be. But under the U.S. code, you have all sorts of things that are investigated under anti-terrorism statutes.
Well, just because
in the state of Saudi Arabia says that anyone who's an atheist is a terrorist.
Right. I mean, but the thing is, just because something's investigated as terrorism is doesn't mean it's terror. That it automatically makes it terrorism. It's investigated as terrorism, and then the terrorism investigation says. No,
just a crazy dude.
Right.
I feel like you said before, Sam, words have meaning.
Actually, that's Rush Limbaugh. But,
yeah,
okay.
Well, words have meaning.
Yeah.
That's my best Rush Limbaugh today.
That was actually pretty good.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Terrorism is a very specific organized act. Like, you know, you talk about a group of people is usually involved, and usually it is not just politically motivated, but is to reach a political end.
Yeah.
You know, people are committing acts to create a specific change. That's what terrorism is.
I really didn't want to talk about this because it feels like I'm taking away from what happened, from this freaking tragedy. But then I felt my head just sort of falling down the drain. And so to get it out, I'm just going to talk about it. I guess because I don't want to. The fact of the matter is somebody was on public transportation, just found a couple of people who didn't look like him and started shouting at them. And then when other people tried to defend those people, he put three people in the hospital, killing two of them.
Right.
I guess at the end of the day, if terrorism is if it's possible to be to do terrorism as a single individual, that is definitely what this guy is doing.
Right.
I think that's really where I should put it. I like the technical discussion you and I were having, mm-hmm. but I brought us here, and I'm beginning to get this little sicky feeling in my stomach.
Let's not forget real victims.
Yeah, let's not forget that two people died. Let's not forget that two people were singled out by this guy on public transportation just trying to get through their day.
Right.
And the reason he singled these two people out was because the holy month is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are the facts that, as far as I can tell, are not under dispute.
Let's also not forget, though, that it creates an environment where someone might feel more targeted because they don't know whether someone is going to stick up for them. Because if someone is sticking up for someone who's being bullied, they are at risk of getting stabbed by someone.
Precisely.
And that creates a real culture of fear and discomfort and disquiet.
So terrorism. Okay.
I would put it there.
Yeah. Question answered.
There you go.
All right. And I know I did just sort of like interrupt you in mid-thought during our Is It Terrorism discussion. But like I said, I got this little sicky feeling in my stomach and I realized I brought us here. So I got to get us out.
I think you were right.
Okay.
you're right to do that. Some other time we can get into an etymological discussion of terrorism.
Yeah, an etymological discussion of terrorism, like the evolution of terrorism in the last 20 years, I think, of what terrorism means to people in the last 20 years, is a discussion definitely worth having. I think I would like to have it absent an event where we have to wonder what terrorism is.
Right.
I think something divorced from the actual death of people might be the time to have it, because what you were saying had value, and that's it's like, oh my god, this may, but this is not the time.
There are grieving families out there who don't care about our semantics right now.
But I think we just named the episode. Is it terrorism?
Yes.
Speaking of individual crazy people doing crazy and possibly damaging things, it has been uncovered that the newly elected Montana congressman who gained notoriety for body slamming a reporter on the eve of his election uses his interpretation of the Bible to inform his public policy views. In a talk at Montana Bible College in 2015, Gianforte expressed that the concept of retirement is unbiblical because Noah built the ark at 600 years of age. Gianforte has contributed large sums to the Montana Family Foundation, an anti-abortion and anti-marriage equality group that his wife chairs. He also has supported a Montana Creation Museum that displays dinosaurs as coexisting with humans fewer than six millennia ago.
Sorry.
So, Mr. Greg Gianforte.
Before we get into the crazy bit.
Yes.
Using your personal beliefs to guide your policy decisions is okay.
Right.
Okay, I just want to make that clear. It's like, I'm not challenging him because he's using his religious beliefs to come up with policy positions. That's not against the First Amendment. That's not against the First Amendment. That's not a separation of church and state. And that's the thing that it's really easy for people on the other side of the debate to label, you know, to sort of point at us and see what you do. You want you're specifically advocating for a government that isn't influenced by. Well, OK, yes, that's true. But this is democracy working.
Right.
Montana wanted a crazy person. Well, this part of Montana, this district wanted a crazy person. This district got a crazy person.
Right.
Well,
let us discuss how crazy he is.
Just because he does use it doesn't mean that we can't say I disagree with his personal religious beliefs and how it informs his public policy, and I want to have people vote against him.
We have a clip.
Do we?
Would you like to hear it?
I would love to hear this.
It's something I kind of reflect on, but there's nothing in the Bible that talks about retirement, and yet it's been an accepted concept in our culture today. It's like nowhere does it say, well, he was a good and faithful servant, so he went to the beach. You know, it doesn't say that anywhere. And you think back, the example I think of is Noah. How old was Noah when he built the ark? 600. Yeah, okay. He wasn't, like, cashing Social Security checks. He wasn't hanging out. He was working, right? So I think we have an obligation to work. Now, the role we have in work may change over time, but the concept of retirement is not biblical.
How long did Noah live? Didn't he live to 900?
Maybe something like that. He was at least 600 when he built the ark.
So, but if he lived till 600 and then died at 900, and the last meaningful thing that he did was build the ark, what did he do for those last three centuries, for the last third of his life? Sort of muck about and have sex with things?
Wow.
I mean, actually quite explicitly, right? I mean, yeah, that's
oh, yes, right after the flood, he uncovered his nakedness because he got so drunk, and which is the nice Bible way saying if he tried to do his kids.
Yeah, and his daughters just took advantage of him being drunk or something?
No, it was this is whence comes the curse of Ham, because one of the children saw him naked, and then the other child walked backwards with a cloak to then throw it over his father so that no one would have to see anybody's genitals or anything like that. But the one that did witness Noah's nakedness ended up being cursed to the south, and in biblical terms, that's we all get black people.
Wait, the curse
stemming from Noah.
The curse of Ham, so that's why Jewish people can't eat pork products?
That's
even more nonsensical than I thought.
No, what ended up, you know, having a lot of religious Bible believers justify racism.
Yeah, okay, so according to Yahoo Answers, so take this with a huge grain of salt, according to Genesis 9:29, he lived 950 years. So the last, like, major bit of construction, the last sort of, I don't know, industrial or commercial thing that he did was build a boat, and then he spent 350 years just sort of, again, mucking about and having sex with things.
Right.
Sounds a bit like retirement to me. I mean, what is he? He's expecting the word retirement to hear. Oh, the word retirement isn't in the Bible.
It doesn't say Social Security in here.
Yeah, therefore, it doesn't exist.
It also doesn't say coffee or smartphone in the Bible, but I'm sure he drinks.
Yeah,
those.
It doesn't say interview or election, I think, in it either.
Does it say body slam?
Ooh, yeah. Oh, it says thrown upon the ground, or foreigner.
Well, and just in general, isn't the entire, like, if there was a purpose for the advancement of society, of going from one culture to a more advanced culture, it's so that we don't have to do things like continue working when we're elderly.
But he doesn't believe in improvement. He believes that we had an idyllic state in the past, and that everything that has occurred after that is a step down, not a step up.
Right.
He actually religiously disbelieves in progress.
Right. And a whole class of people in our country agree with him on that. And that, for me, is the real crazy.
That is, yeah.
That is, like, you know, believing that a guy lived to be 950 years old and built an ark at 600 is kind of crazy. But believing that that was a better situation than we're in now.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I would get real bored.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just mocking about, oh yeah, eating fruit, naming animals sounds really boring. It really does.
I just like his clip where he says that the role or the nature of what that work means might change, thereby justifying his work, as I say in quotes, as merely being the board member for various foundations and Christian schools, as merely having sold off your tech company to Oracle in 2011, making bazillions of dollars. Yes, the nature of your work certainly changed, sir. Certainly changed, Mr. Gianforte.
And what was the jobs market like after the global flood, anyway? Was there a... I mean, did he have to go to the remains of a...
Somebody had to get the penguins to Antarctica and the kangaroos to Australia and stuff. So there were jobs to be done.
So it was okay. A lot of couriers?
is that a hauling thing, or like what?
That's a good question. I think it's pre-mail, like Kangaroo Express. I don't know.
You see, now I'm thinking of the Ark as like a multi-warhead weapon. Where it goes up in the air, and then when it's at its apogee, it splits into like 70,000 different like mini arcs,
like,
and
little pods.
Complex, and
they are.
I just thought of a great mod for DEFCON. Oh man, that
really
nuclear,
depressing game.
Yeah, that really depressing nuclear war simulator, where instead of different nations trying to kill each other, you're
spreading biospheres.
Yeah, the world is flooded, and you're trying to distribute the animals. That, oh geez.
I just like that he brings up Noah also, who most famous for being in a boat. Right?
Yeah.
Like going on a 40-day and 40-night cruise. And he said, hey, Noah didn't say, you know, in my retirement, kick back and sit on the beach. No, kind of precisely that. Yes, the waters did recede, but, you know.
You see, isn't there stuff in the Bible about honoring your parents and taking care of the elderly and charity? I mean, aren't these things all in... Well, I mean, I know you only really know half of the Bible, but...
Well, yeah, there's actually the concept of peyote, which is leaving the corners
of your field. Peyote.
Not peyote, but peyote or peyos. It's leaving the corners of your field fallow for the orphan, the widow, the basically vulnerable people in your society to come and eat of your own fields. And it has been then taken in many religious scenarios to say this is the biblical version of charity, that you take, you know, the corners of your fields, whatever that might be, whether that's 10% of your income, whether that's, you know, donating to food pantries, quite literally taking your food and leaving it for the vulnerable members of society. But so, yes, there are specific instructions for how to care for vulnerable people in society.
I suspect Gigante Forte here,
Greg Gianforte,
probably would be one of those guys who is working on the Conservapedia Bible Project.
Mm.
Have you heard about this? I mean,
yes.
I don't know if it's even going anymore because they announced it like 10 years ago now.
That was Andrew Schlafly.
Andrew Schlafly.
Yes.
Yeah. If you ever wanted to know what the child of Phyllis Schlafly would be like, the answer is everything you thought it would be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is not a twist ending, folks.
No.
No, I actually...
And Mike Shyamalan had nothing to do with this.
I went on a rabbit trail one time looking at sort of the justifications that they were making. Because, like, you could boil down the Conservapedia Bible Project to, we are trying to take the liberal bias out of the Bible.
Right. We are trying to make, rather than... what we say we're doing, which is making the Bible, making our policies match our religious beliefs, they're trying to make their religious beliefs match their political beliefs.
Right.
Which was great, because it was finally something everybody can dislike. Me and that Fisher guy who does that speech in front of Bob Odenkirk's office.
He's the guy who got fired.
Brian Fisher.
He's the guy who got fired by American Family Association when they were like trying to reach out to somebody, and then got hired back once that went over. Once that was done with.
Yeah. He's still tweeting. But he used to do a talk show on a set that looked like the Bob Odenkirk's character on Breaking Bad, his office.
Okay. And now I see where. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He spoke out against them. And so when he's speaking out against Conservapedia, and I'm speaking out against Conservapedia, it's like, wow, there is
no right here. Like, you are full of wrong.
Yeah. You know, nobody likes you. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. I understand that it for some politicians, it makes sense to sort of ally oneself with the president, but taking up an improv career in professional wrestling is probably the least effective way to do it.
Are you referencing now Donald Trump's actual incident of body slamming someone in a WWE
show? No, he got body slammed. Well, he didn't get body slammed. He got he got a shocker, I think is what it was called. I'm just leaving that there. But this guy body slammed a dude. And he got arrested for it, and the guy's pressing
misdemeanor charges of assault,
specifically a member of the press,
right? Guy who was asking him questions about what are your stance on the new healthcare bill, which honestly, if you're a politician running for office, I feel like that's some information people would like that's not an unreasonable request. And yeah, he straight out just slammed the guy on the ground, broke his glasses, broke his nose.
Well, now the guy has a pre-existing condition, so, you know, we know how well that's going to go for that reporter.
Oh, God, can we quit it with the pre-existing condition jokes?
You know what was a pre-existing condition? The Earth prior to 6,000 years ago? The Earth existed more than 6,000 years.
What?
Oh, man, he muted my mic!
I was kind of serious about him getting tired of the pre-existing condition jokes.
I'm bringing it back to Gianforte's belief that the Earth is only 6,000 years old.
Yeah, so there's a creation. I knew there was a creationist museum in Montana.
Yeah.
But now that we have a body-slamming public official backing it, maybe a field trip's in order.
That would be fun. We could see the T-Rex that his family foundation specifically donated to that fossil and dinosaur museum.
Yeah, sounds pretty good. But any closing remarks?
Well, there was one little sort of footnote in this that really stood out to me. When you look at the entire statement, basically talking about, you know, the Bible does not mention retirement and everything. I think this is an example, and this goes back to what you were saying at the beginning of this segment about how when we do politics, we do want to tie it back to atheism and the basis of the show.
Right.
And this guy is obviously a strong believer in the Protestant work ethic. And this is a way in which, you know, you can't get away from religion even if you don't believe it, because it permeates the culture. And it's attitudes like this that push this idea that you always have to be working, you always have to be giving more, you always have to be contributing more, and to the point where you can't take care of yourself anymore.
Right.
And it is such a common and pushed idea in our culture that it's like, I work 10-hour days. I have for the last month. I worked my butt off to get down to working only 8-hour days. And I get calls in the middle of the evening. You know, I get calls all evening long. I get calls all Saturday long, which I'm not complaining about. This is my job.
Mm-hmm.
But after putting all that effort in, if I get sick and want to take a day off, I still feel guilty for that. I still feel like a slacker. I feel like, well, I feel like crap, but I probably could have gone in today. Maybe I shouldn't have taken that day off. And this is the way in which this sort of ethic that is derived specifically from this religion has permeated our entire culture and even gets inside my own brain. And that's something that I think is worth arguing against.
I think it's worth arguing against. I think the idea that your only value is the calories that you expend doing work is a problem.
Right.
But I would be hesitant to hang this on the Protestants. The Protestant work ethic, the Puritan work ethic, we've heard about it, we know about it, but they didn't build it. They inherited it from other places. It's not like pre-Protestant Reformation serfs had a lot of free time.
This is true.
It's not like Roman slaves had a lot of free time. It's not like most Roman citizens even had a lot of free time. You had to be in the, you kind of had to be in the upper reaches of Roman society before leisure became a thing.
Right.
To a certain extent. I mean, that was different at different eras of the Republic and the Empire.
But can we not take to task the culture that entrenches that even further and holds it up as something that they own?
The problem is a lot of people, like, I'll work till the day I die. I will.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I feel like I'm forced to, but because I actually derive personal value from it. I like doing it. I actually feel good doing it. Is that the Protestant work ethic, or is that something else?
I'm not sure, that because I you are not the only. My wife Carol, she's very similar. Like, she's a school teacher and she gets summers off. She does not do well with her summer. She needs something to do. She needs projects. She can't feel like she can barely get through a weekend not doing anything without feeling like crap about it.
Yeah.
But she does call that Protestant work ethic.
Yeah, I know. And I've always, she's talked like that. And it's not that her point doesn't make sense,
mm-hmm.
but I also feel like it's an incomplete description, that there are parts missing.
Hmm.
And maybe this is just another, we might need to break this out into another episode.
An episode discussing the intersection of Protestantism and then capitalism, or whatever kind of.
Maybe, yeah, because there's definitely, to some of this, there is definitely a industrial revolution feel to mm-hmm. some of this,
right.
Where, you know, we're all factory workers, or we're all parts in a machine.
Right.
And that's something that really spoke to a lot of the Protestants. I mean, the Industrial Revolution is the time when you had a huge swath of American Protestant religions. And
yeah, see, Becky
sects.
Is clearly signing on with you, which I have questions about. I'm not. You see, the great thing about this is that the centerpiece of your argument, which is we are compelled in American society to work ourselves to death.
Mm-hmm.
Is, I don't think that's a valueless statement. I think there's a lot of truth there. Is it the Protestant work ethic in Japan, where people actually literally work themselves to death, and they've got a single word for it?
Right. Probably not.
But maybe, because their capitalist society their modern society was built in concert with the United States.
Right.
So there might be a there. This is fascinating to me. My gut was saying, I don't think that's the Protestant work ethic. And then, well, is it? And then all of these branches happen. This is a very interesting concept, and I don't think this is a closing thought. This is an opening thought. I think we need to tackle this head on.
All right.
Apply directly to the forehead.
It's just wax, people. It's just wax.
Well, menthol. It's menthol and wax. If you like menthol, and I do, but I'm not going to pay $10 for half a gram of menthol. All right. So this was supposed to be a 20-minute segment. Hint, it's not. But I've got a lot of material from yesterday. We did a whole political section yesterday, or last week. Sorry, my time thing.
Sam's living in Time Cube.
Yeah. Where we discussed, like, we did a political section last week, but we didn't use, because the everything went long. Just as valid this week as it was last week, because all the news this week has just been fallout from what happened last week. So we're going to air it. I also have a little bit of a criticism of the guy we interviewed.
That's Gleb Sapolsky's interview from last week.
Very, very minor criticism in the grand scheme of things. So thank you, Dave.
Absolutely. A real pleasure.
Thank you, Becky.
Thanks, Sam.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Like I said, we'll go into our political section with Ron John last week. And when we come out of it, yeah. Current modern Sam will see you next week, I guess. Yeah. I'm totally screwing this outro up. Have you noticed that? I don't know what to do with this.
Has Ngadwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngadwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an Ngadwe Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com. I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
Welcome back, sir. Perhaps not, because I might have to split this into two episodes. I'm not entirely sure yet. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number, toll-free nationwide. So that was a pretty good interview.
Yeah. Wow, what an interview.
A little bit of a, I got to admit, I only for time constraints did I end the interview, because...
You could have dug in, couldn't you? I can see it.
If that's what the... I want to caveat it by saying I think what he's doing is good. I'm in favor of it. I will be taking the pro-truth pledge. But if that's what it looks like, it needs some work.
Well, it's a first thing.
No. Right? No. Of course you're going to need iterative,
right.
You know, iterative fixes as things change. But so I got into it a little bit. I wasn't expecting it to be a big deal, but, you know, I said, I don't really understand where this post-truth thing is coming from. And I wasn't expecting to double down on post-truth. I haven't had time to go look at studies. This was just off the cuff in a discussion. And when you say, well, I have scientific facts and you have, what was the word he used?
Your experience, your comfort level?
No.
And your gut feelings.
Your gut feelings, your intuition. And I'm like, I have a little bit more than intuition there. We have a trend line. Again, I can't cite anything, but if you'd like to, I can go look it up. I mean, I remember people talking about decreasing trust in the media going as far back as 1996. And mm-hmm. that's a trend line.
Right.
That is a fact.
But there is a fairly significant hockey stick phenomenon that I think he's pointing to about 2015.
But a hockey stick, the whole point of the hockey stick phenomenon is that it's not new. It's just an increase. It's not a new phenomenon.
So perhaps the difference between pro-truth, presupposing that there was a truth era, the difference in that is marking the low trend and low-level rumblings contrasted with this big turnabout that he's really focusing on.
Yeah, I think the way he's characterizing it is... I think when he characterizes it specifically in that way, and I'm talking about the end of the conversation, I'm not talking about what he said in the beginning in the other stuff. It was when mm-hmm. we moved on to this. Is the other thing that we have to understand is he's saying he's got these scientific facts backing us up, these studies, the research, the statistics. The problem is we can't trust the statistics right now or some of the research on political discussions, because if we did, Hillary Clinton would be president right now. But she's not.
Okay.
When our scientific tools fail us, we have to recognize that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think that should be a part of the pro-truth pledge. And when he starts falling back on people say this and people say that, using the same tools that failed us in the 2016 election, I think that's a place that could use some work.
Okay.
I think in that... if there are better tools that come to light that reveal more precise information, that third point that Dr. Sibersky mentioned, which is celebrating the retraction of an assertion that you make based on something in the face of new evidence and celebrating changing your
opinion. That's precisely it. It's part of the reason I like the pro-truth pledge is that it creates an environment where if you are faced with facts that go against your argument, you have an environment where you can retract that argument, where you're not called a flip-flopper or you're not made to suffer for following what the evidence says.
You actually have the ability to be smarter every day.
Right.
But there can come a time where you say, well, 2 weeks ago, I had an impression about X, and now I have a different impression of X based on the following. Like, you can actually trace that back.
But when the person who's promulgating the pro-truth pledge says prosecutes it in the way that he did in that argument, that's part of where I'm saying you might need some work there, because it didn't feel like I was being given an environment where I could retract without social harm. And that's the main, I mean, I think he's, I think this sticking to pro-truth thing, I think there's a flaw there. Not a complete flaw, mm-hmm. but and nothing that detracts from the importance of the pro-truth pledge. Mike, I cannot stress that enough.
You're talking about the post-truth, this notion of a post-truth.
The notion
era.
Of I think there's some flaws in the way people think about the concept of post-truth. Mm-hmm. Now, he is distinct from the way people talk about post-truth.
Yes.
He is. He's in a different, from the way most people talk about truth, is that's where my argument comes from, which mm-hmm. I didn't use here because that's not how he's talking about it.
Right.
Where people think there was like some sort of golden age of truth during the journalistic era.
Right.
There wasn't.
There's
always been advertising. There's always been bias.
Right.
You can look at primary source documents dating back, you know, a millennia and analyze the bias.
Like, and we can also talk about
published it.
We can
and
also talk about the history of newspapers. We can talk about yellow journalism. We can talk about the trust in news organizations during the McCarthy era, which was fairly low, not as low as it is now,
mm-hmm.
grant.
Right.
But, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I was talking about. It's like there are flaws here, and I felt like the flaws I was pointing out was getting a little bit of the brush off.
In that tiny moment, I get it.
And it's the one tiny moment in that entire interview mm-hmm. where we had a disagreement. So guess what I'm going to talk about? Because this is radio.
The hay shall be made, ladies and gentlemen. The hay shall be made.
At some point, I got to make sausage.
Making hay, we're making sausage.
Yeah. But at the end of it, I think I really enjoyed that interview.
It was a lot of fun.
I reiterated in the post, I don't want to start a feud. That's mm-hmm. not what I'm about. I think this post-truth, or sorry, this pro-truth, there's a lot of P words, so I'm getting confused. This
don't edit that out, please.
Pro-truth pledge is incredibly important. And I think the way he's going about it is a way that has a success path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
it does.
Where using atheism or skepticism or something like that as the path to truth or the path to facts or is not something that's going to play in the public square. The thing that I'm glad you brought it up in the interview, the treating the public commons as a resource that needs to be managed.
Right.
Learning from past movements.
Yeah.
These are all really important things. And so I'm not.
There's an incredible level of intentionality behind trying to achieve a really noble goal here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in support of this guy. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Straight up. And this disagreement means absolutely nothing at all. I just want to make that
clear.
This
is really just an opportunity to call him back on.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. You don't point. Yeah, I guess maybe every time I do marketing, I should just have you come on. Sam is marketing now.
Right. Yeah. You're establishing an East Coast, West Coast beef.
Yeah.
Or a West Coast, Central Coast beef.
Yeah.
So that we can have a second.
Hey, man, Ohio's great. They got the Dayton Hamfinch in there.
Right.
Donald Trump fired FBI Director James Comey, who was leading an investigation into the Trump campaign's ties to Russia. Trump subsequently tweeted that Comey had better hope that there are no tapes of their conversations and seemed to try to warn Comey against leaking any such tapes to the press. Press secretary and occasional shrubbery lurker Sean Spicer refused to confirm or deny the existence of any hypothetical tapes or Oval Office recording devices. However, a summary of Trump's comments to Russian media quotes him as referring to Comey as crazy and as a real nut job. This past Friday, Comey agreed to testify before Congress on whether his firing or any other acts were an attempt of Trump to obstruct the criminal probe into Michael Flynn.
Fascinating developments.
So you may have heard, if you listen to Atheist Nomad's 200th episode, which if you haven't, you should. This is maybe a slight reprise of some of the things that I mm-hmm. said there. But it's beginning to look like this Comey guy, to say nothing of his competency, but when he's opening investigations and when he's looking into this thing, he looks precisely like somebody who just doesn't give a crap about who's president.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be what he
is. Which is, that's the role.
Yeah.
That's why he's got a 10-year tenure.
And so, like,
10-year term.
You know, back in November, he was the Democrat Satan,
mm-hmm.
and now he's Republican Satan, and he's Democrat Saint. And he really looks like somebody who just doesn't give a crap about politics, which is what that's supposed to look like.
There's still some hinkiness to, like,
Is hinkiness about.
I mean, and I find myself, I knew that this was coming, that there was going to be like, oh, James Comey is like, you know, there's going to be like first there was the investigation into emails, hashtag but the emails. Then there was the investigation into, like, Anthony Weiner's laptop, which just had all of the trappings of salacious clickbait fodder.
Yeah, I'm not saying he was a good director, he was good at his job.
Right.
I'm just saying is that he was clearly giving off he gives me the impression of somebody who didn't give a crap, which is what
I almost see it a different way. I almost feel
a lot
like
of people
actually
do.
Yeah, I almost feel like he gave a crap and then found out that like he gave a crap in the interest of perhaps continuing his role under President Trump, but didn't actually realize what loyalty to President Trump means. I think loyalty to President Trump means something radically different than it would like than loyalty to
any other elected official.
Well, I think it means differently than loyalty perhaps to President Clinton. I think it definitely means different than it means something very different than loyalty to the Constitution. I think loyalty to President Trump is, you know, l'etat c'est moi.
Right.
And that's I don't know that we
means,
actually have the vocabulary for that.
That means more tater tots, please. Yeah.
Right. Yes. The state. I am the state. Yeah. The state. It is me in literal French translation. But yeah, like I am to say that I am the state literally that Trump is, you know, in spite of the fact that we built a constitution around the notion of the president is not an elected king, Trump is an elected king. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the ways that we know that he is the elected, he considers himself an elected king, is that we seem to be intimately familiar with the activities and political mandates of the prince and the princess.
Right.
Which is to say Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump.
Yeah.
Well, to say nothing of Donald Trump slamming the judiciary left and right, mm-hmm. over things that he disagrees with.
Right.
I mean, you can't, as president, usurp the judiciary. They are your check and your balance.
Right. Well, and he hires people who actually do that for him as well. So mm-hmm. that's, again, that's the loyalty. So when you look at Comey's inability to be loyal, you want to look at, well, what are other people who are being loyal? What are they doing? So you mentioned the judiciary. So you've got what's his name? Attorney General Garden Gnome.
Jeff Sessions.
Oh,
Rosenstein.
I'm sorry. We should have this on a button too, along with Pascal's Wager. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III.
Really?
Saying all like that he doesn't understand why a judge from some tiny island can make policy about what the president can and can't do.
Oh, because it happens to be part of the federal circuit, and that tiny island is one that we took over. It's called Hawaii, and right. It is a state, and it's part of our union.
I almost think Jefferson Sessions was trying really crudely to make a Hamilton reference.
Yeah.
Because there's actually there is a line in Hamilton, like, how can a man on an island far away determine the price of tea?
Right.
I think that's what he was trying to say about Hawaii.
Except that Hawaii's not a colony.
Right. Hawaii should be really pissed at us by now. Seriously, like, to the people of Hawaii, we're not all like this. We love you. We're happy that you're a state. But it's been 8 years of...
Or
like,
rather, we're as happy as you are that... We are precisely as happy as you are that you are a state. No more happy, no less happy.
Exactly. So, yes.
I have watched more and paid more attention to news this week than I have previously... in the last 2 years. I probably watched more CNN this week than I have in the previous 2 years.
And you and I were talking about this, that like the print media and primary source, sort of like traditional journalism.
Yeah.
Like they did the job.
They are
this
back
week.
On the case yeah. this week.
They nailed it this week.
I was not happy that Washington Post adopted democracy dies in darkness mm-hmm. as their tagline.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
it's the new tagline of the paper and it's on their website.
But why?
Masthead.
Why are you unhappy with it, Sam?
It's too dramatic.
Okay.
Like I would do well. I would if you're going to make that much of an obvious pass at Trump, it's like we got a job to do. Doing the job.
Right.
You know, I have my occasional issues with literally everything that is a noun. But in the case of the Washington Post, I didn't like the way they dealt with the Snowden stuff. They were calling for his imprisonment, but they were willing to use him as a primary source. It's like that's a little weird that's a weird editorial standpoint. But aside from that,
right.
They have been rocking it.
They've been doing a bang up job of covering minute by minute.
Yeah.
I'm really liking the coverage of the current voyage abroad of Donald Trump this time.
Everybody run.
Yeah.
The gray lady's got a rhetorical gun.
You mecha me crazy.
You know, I think we're missing a major thing here.
I just made a New York Times reference and you guys totally ignored it.
The gray lady is New York Times?
Yeah.
Yeah, the gray lady. Yeah. All the news that fits. No, it's all the news that's fit to print. But the gray lady's competitors often rephrase it as all the news that fits.
Pardon my ignorance of journalistic history and integrity. We've got one huge thing here that we're missing, though, in terms of communication of facts and doing the job and getting the job done. Mm. And that is occasional shrubbery lurker Sean Spicer, who I am hearing is set to have a increasingly minimal role in terms of the White House press conveyance. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders is set to be having a more prominent role.
Everybody,
on Trump's return.
Everybody's been assuming that. I don't quite buy it.
You can't. It's well. So for one thing, it's all palace intrigue. So none of it actually matters.
Yeah, none of it matters.
Right. Yeah. But the whole sort of I Heart Huckabee thing happening in the inside. I am a pop culture reference machine. This is going to happen.
You're a bad pop culture reference machine.
Well, also that yes. Yeah. But the who is going to be briefing the press. It's I think if anything, it's an effort to make sure that we continue to pay attention to the White House press briefings. The White House press briefings are absolutely useless at this point. I think actually,
no, they are not useless. They are a great insight into the psychology of the West Wing right now. They are the secondary channel of information is where it's all at right now. The information that's being transmitted in the press briefings is nigh useless. I agree with you there.
But all of that information is also being presented in print form because the press briefings themselves are actually already circulated via print. I think we should just basically constantly be running, like we should be running a constant feed of the press briefings and the corresponding Twitter feed.
That's precisely my point. You have 3 points of data on any subject.
No, but the third point of data is the leak stream.
Okay, so 4 points of data. You have 4 points of data. You have the leak stream.
Right.
You have the unsigned memos from the White House that don't come from the press office that have a statement about the problem du jour.
Right.
You have the press briefings. And then you have real Donald Trump, the Twitter feed.
Yeah.
And with these four data points, you have this enormous amount of parallax.
Mm-hmm.
Like you've got very large array level parallax going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gives you weird, like, I know more about who's out, like how tenuous and how angry everybody is at the White House than I ever really wanted to know. Thanks to the fact that you've got 17 opinions going on, the things that they agree on, the things that they don't agree on. And then Donald Trump and then just basically says, you are all wrong. I am, in fact, a criminal.
Right.
You know, it's amazing. It's an interesting psychological. It's interesting psychologically.
Yeah.
It's terrifying politically.
Right.
I'm convinced that the reason that they would want to minimize Sean Spicer's role in terms of the press office from the White House is because they can't stand having their administration being made fun of by a woman. They can't stand Melissa McCarthy dressing up as Sean Spicer as the focal point. They couldn't stand enough Alec Baldwin making fun of Trump, but to have a woman making fun of Spicer,
it's
arm
feminizing.
Of your administration, is saying, all right, so let's put Sarah Huckabee Sanders and see what they can do there to her to make her ridiculous.
Well, and then they did.
Right. And then, yeah, right.
It stopped them in no way.
But it's funny because that, like, almost the calculus of how decisions are made, all of it seems like playground ball. Like, there's a part of me, there's a part of me.
It seems like reality television. Oh, I wonder why.
Right. So reality television is actually about people's behavior and, like, they're, you know, like actual slights and people snipping at each other and doing all kinds of stuff to each other. But it's all intentional. Like, there's all, like, you know, I'm not here to make friends or whatever.
I meant it in terms of getting your ratings up. They're seeing.
I am willing to propose that one of the big reasons why Comey got fired is because he made Trump feel small. And I don't mean he made Trump feel small in, like, he slighted him or he was when he calls him a showboat. I feel like he's talking about the fact that James Comey is actually nearly 6 inches taller than Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Like, he's actually
physically
taller. The guy's
a monster. He's 6'8", right?
And Sean Spicer is actually a very short guy. He's actually quite... He is. I mean, like, you see him next to other people, and he is actually much shorter than a lot of other people who work in the White House, particularly people who work in the White House in a professional.
So you literally mean he makes him feel literally
he
small.
Donald Trump has to physically look upwards at James Comey. I think that actually activates enough of Donald Trump's reptilian brain to make him want to get rid of the guy. I think it's that trivial.
I don't think you're wrong, but I don't know that it's the complete picture.
Well, how tall is Robert Mueller? Okay, is the question here at this point.
We can't. Fair point. And we'll talk about that in a minute.
That is a fair point.
We need to timeline this out just for my own sake. Mm-hmm. So work with me here. I'm going to timeline what this last couple weeks have been like. So apparently sometime in January, Comey sat down with Trump, and Trump tried to say, I'm not being investigated right. I'm not being investigated right.
Right.
Can you knock off this? I hope you can see your way to knocking off this stuff about Flynn.
Mm-hmm. And he was like, and Comey's response was, you should really be contacting the Justice Department via the White House Counsel's office. That's how these things are supposed to work. Lawyers talk to lawyers.
Yeah. And then he was like, he's trying to get a loyalty pledge out of the guy repeatedly.
Yeah.
All Trump needed to do was give him two scoops of ice cream, then he would in like Flynn.
Oh, Anyway, God.
I can be bad too.
Okay. All right. You win.
Moving on.
I'll stop.
Moving on. So it like 2 weeks ago, Jeff Sessions recused himself, so it falls down to
Rod Rosenstein.
Rod Rosenstein, who is told, we're canning Comey. Come up with a position paper so that we can can Comey.
Right. Write me a write me a 10-page paper on why I need to do the thing I already decided I'm doing.
Right. So he wrote it, and then the White House was like, yeah, so this guy said this dude needs to be fired, so we're firing him. And Rosenstein was like, hell no!
Right.
And so they pivoted on that, and then that's when Trump said to Lester Holt, hey, home team, that Lester Holt was on on the news in Chicago. I was going to fire him anyway.
Yeah. That I made the decision. I'm the decider,
right.
Basically.
And if
he went to the I'm decider pitch.
And if he left it there, it would have been fine. But then he followed it up by saying, because of the Russia thing.
Right.
And now he's been trying to backpedal that.
Mm-hmm.
So they can him. And then all the leaks start coming from Comey. That or Comey's friends.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's Comey, but it's Comey.
Right.
And that about this lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Now about why he didn't like immediately go to the Justice Department was because he felt like he was going to have to educate the president about proper conduct with the director of the FBI. All that stuff, and then 24 hours later, literally 24 hours later. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein this week appointed former FBI Director Robert Mueller as a special investigator over any connections between Russia, the Trump campaign, and members of Trump's administration. Trump responded by characterizing the investigation as a taxpayer-funded charade and the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history, and added that it hurts our country terribly because it shows we're a divided, mixed-up, not unified country. Mueller. Okay, it is Mueller. Who was lauded by both Democrats and Republicans, has the right to subpoena documents, to interview the president, and to investigate any obstruction of justice or other criminal act. Also, according to the press, Robert Mueller is 80 feet tall and defecates justice.
He is universally respected
as a fair
lawman.
Yeah. Not always. I mean, occasionally when he says something people don't like, it's the usual press, oh, he's crap, he's wrong.
Right.
But then you get away from a particular, you get 5 seconds away from a particular issue, and suddenly, yeah, he's 80 feet tall and craps justice.
Yeah.
So Trump can fire this guy.
Yeah.
Right?
He hasn't so far. He is under the Justice Department. I mean, he's specially appointed. He's supposed to be independent at this point.
Right.
But he is under the Justice Department, which is in the executive branch.
Right.
If I remember my history correctly.
And it's under the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions.
But Jeff Sessions has recused himself for this entire investigation because he's connected to it.
But Jeff Sessions, if Jeff Sessions has recused himself, I don't understand then who is in charge of it. I mean, like, does Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein basically have a permanent job?
Yeah.
Like, if nobody can be involved in the Russia investigation, and the Russia investigation is literally what the entire presidency and leadership of the executive branch pivots on, like, Rod Rosenstein has a job for the rest of the Trump administration, however long that is, and B, better have somebody chewing his food.
Which is why when he said, aw, hell no, and threatened to walk, the entire White House pivoted.
Right.
I believe you have the issue surrounded, Bron John.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I get it. Because he's like the linchpin now.
Yeah. Because
he can say whatever he wants now.
He's the pin connected to the linchpin.
Right.
He's the Justice Department linchpin, but the real linchpin right now is Robert Mueller
and
the independent investigation. So,
speaking of people who need food testers.
Right.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Can we
give Robert Mueller a bionic heart and make sure that everything is fine and that he can continue?
The Cheney treatment?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's got a line of, he's got an entire line of hearts. They're all just like, waiting in the wings. Maybe there's an entire set of Mueller clones.
Yeah.
They're all running like in a raid array somewhere. So like if one of them dies, the other one's like immediately online. I want to drill into this witch hunt thing.
Yeah.
The single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history.
My favorite thing was a representative from Salem, Massachusetts that kind of got on Twitter and was like, I can, with great authority, say that this is not the single greatest witch hunt in American history, speaking as a representative from Salem, Massachusetts,
and it's only
home of the witch hunt.
It's only because he did it on Twitter that we don't say that with like a retainer lisp. excuse me.
So, Ron John, do we want to stick with just politicians in the United States, or do we want to go international?
Well,
just give me that answer first.
Let's start with the United States, and then okay. Let's broaden our
United States list. The word of Donald Trump is final because he is the leader of the nation. So we have this list of presidents who have been treated the worst in history.
Right.
Number one is Donald Trump. Number two. So who's number two? You say Kennedy.
I might go Lincoln.
I'd go Lincoln
because Kennedy actually was able to frolic in his most presidential way, and Lincoln and suffered from Marfan syndrome and depression.
Kennedy also frolicked in some unpresidential ways as well.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
But Lincoln, there isn't really evidence to any of that, and he just suffered with his genetic malformation and depression and had to, you know, shoulder the Civil War.
But that's not a witch hunt. That's like just basically having Job-like characteristics.
Oh, okay.
I think it has to be external. Like, unless if somebody,
there is that whole Civil War thing, though.
There is the whole Civil War thing.
Yeah.
Yes, we keep forgetting that Civil War, that little Civil War thing.
Nobody knew that.
Well,
it would be
Frederick
so complicated.
Douglass isn't here to remind us. So
right, right, exactly. Who's being recognized more and more these days?
Yeah, he is. So, is it Abraham Lincoln Kennedy or Kennedy Abraham Lincoln?
I gotta say, based on the fact that there was an entire war that he was on one side of, I gotta say, I think you're right. It's Lincoln.
Okay, so it's...
Well, I don't know. I mean, Kennedy, that Bay of Pigs, Cold War, you know.
No, it was only 2 years, though.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Like, elected to another term.
Yeah. Like, Lincoln finished up the Civil War thing, and then his really minor witch hunt happened.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Who'd be... So that's two and three. Four.
So if we think about actual witch hunts, like, it's not actual witch hunts, but I'm thinking about, like, this sort of political persecution in the popular press.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's a lot of alliteration in there. I gotta say Obama. Like, I mean, there was a political cartoon that kind of put the nail on the head for this, and that's why I actually mention it, is it had, the first frame was Trump saying, this is the greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history, and the next frame was Obama jumping out and saying, show us your birth certificate! And I'm like, that's a strong argument. That was like 9 years.
Okay, so you have number one, Donald Trump. A reality television star,
right.
who's famous for firing people, and the press and people make fun of him, but he's still president, and he has both houses of the legislature on his side. He has the majority of state houses, and he has the majority of
governorships
all in his party, all lined up behind him. He's the worst person ever. Second, Abraham Lincoln, who had to fight the one time we got angry enough to split from each other,
mm-hmm.
over ownership of humans.
Right.
Let's just keep that in mind. And who was shot. You have Kennedy, a very tumultuous time in, you know, 20th century American politics.
Also suffered at the hand of being the first Catholic president.
The first Catholic mm-hmm. president, and was shot by people who thought he was, well, by a person who thought he was being bad to Cuba or something for weird purposes. But also suffered a lot of things for his religious stances,
mm-hmm.
and by, you know,
and
had,
youth and a whole other, yeah.
And LBJ,
right.
J. Edgar Hoover and mm-hmm. all that stuff. And then Obama, who's very... citizenship of the United States had been challenged from day one
by none other, like, I mean, I don't
by know the, some reality television
some guy,
star
some guy I can't remember. Maybe Donald Trump could remind us.
Maybe he could.
Yeah.
I see where Trump's coming from. I agree with him. Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
Okay.
Vaclav Havel.
Yeah.
Benazir Bhutto.
Yep. Indira Gandhi.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's fun. So, how about... So, there's two things that we...
What do salad days look like to this guy? Like, I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out. It's like, you got the House of Representatives, you got the Senate, you've got the White House, because that's your gig.
Yeah.
You've got... there was one guy who actually decided to stand up against you and actually investigate you. You canned him.
Yeah.
You're in the middle of a song and dance about how that was about exactly what it wasn't supposed to be about, but you're willing to admit it anyway. Michael Che, actually, the Weekend Update anchor, actually did the opening sketch. He did the cold open for Saturday Night Live last week, and he was actually playing Lester Holt. And he's interviewing Alec Baldwin's Donald Trump, and he goes, and Alec Baldwin's Donald Trump literally says the line. He didn't like that. They didn't like make up a line.
No.
He literally just spoke Donald Trump's line about it was because of the Russia thing. And Michael Che's Lester Holt just says like, so is it over? We got it, right? It's like, oh wait, I'm hearing nothing matters, and we're still here. So there's that. He's got the Senate. He's got the House. He's got the White House. He's got a majority in the SCOTUS. He's got what does great look like to this guy?
I don't know. And the thing that we're ignoring is which might I'm surprised this isn't the biggest. These two things aren't the biggest problems we're talking about. We're talking about obstruction of justice, which is vague. We're talking about firing a guy who is going to get fired no matter what. We're talking about independent hearings. There's two other things. The first thing is that Donald Trump invites the guy who's running all the spies in the United States for Russia into the Oval Office, doesn't let the U.S. press in, lets the Russian press in, lets TASS in, and he goes, oh yeah, here's some great intel. Yeah.
Right.
The president said it, so it's not a crime.
Right.
We're not talking about that. The other thing is that we have Erdogan and company.
Mm-hmm.
Come in and he hangs out with Erdogan to get a couple, you know, he's like, hey, can you tell me how to run all this
and
stuff?
All Erdogan's heavies beat up on people.
And Erdogan's and company goes up and beats on people for a protest in the United States, and nobody does a damn thing about it.
Right. Just like,
why are we talking about this Comey crap?
Right.
Which is nothing compared to this.
Like, how is there not a drumbeat in the Republican Party that, like, foreign security officials beating up American citizens on American soil in the American capital.
If Barack Obama did any of this at all, any tiny component of this at all at any time in his 8 years of presidency,
he would
not be alive right now.
Yeah.
I get it. This Comey thing is important because this is the methodology by which we remove a president. This is how we got Nixon out. I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Killing.
Well, this is how we get rid of presidents.
Yeah.
There are other people who have gotten rid of presidents, and they've gotten rid of presidents in other ways.
In slightly more.
We've named two of them.
Historically interesting ways.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that this is the process by which a presidency is lawfully ended.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. But the fact that you've got these two other things, one of which is an abuse of human rights on American soil that that isn't really being talked about. I mean, it's being talked about a lot.
But nobody's trying. I want somebody to try and then have them come back with diplomatic immunity or whatever. But diplomatic immunity doesn't mean you can't try somebody. Diplomatic immunity means you can't compel them to arrive. You can't compel them to testify.
But if this was done by a different nation under Obama, do you think that we wouldn't be talking about sanctions at the very least, or arms drops and in a more realistic fashion?
I am loath to talk about guns on this show, but I want to see what would have happened if these Turkish guys came up and started beating on American protesters.
And one of
the American protesters shot one of the Turkish guys.
Right.
I want to see where that would have ended up.
Well,
because that's
it would have ended up with a massacre of American citizens on American soil by foreign security officials under diplomatic.
Would they let it go that far, or would they pull back and then pursue a legal opportunity, which is something that Erdogan is trying to do in several places, including Germany, because there's a weird German law that they're trying to get rid of now about saying something bad about a foreign official.
Right.
And now he's trying to push that in Germany. So it's like, yeah, there could have just been a massacre.
Right.
Or they could have tried to put somebody in jail for defending themselves from essentially an invasion. Invasion too strong a word?
Yeah.
I'm beginning to feel like Alex Jones.
Right. Like, at what point?
Try my nutraceuticals.
Like, at what?
Try my glistening nutraceuticals.
Stop talking about your nutraceuticals. I didn't need to know that they were glistening nutraceuticals. I need an adult. I need to talk to my union rep.
Okay, sorry. I need sensitivity training.
Yes, okay.
A few more years in the U.S. and you won't have a union rep, Ranjan.
Or sensitivity. Or training.
Who needs training when we have all the comforting facts before us?
Right. It's all on the internet. It's all out there.
But not everything sucks. Not everything. I mean, at some point, you gotta just sort of kick back and dance, right? I mean, Saudi King Salman bestowed his nation's highest civilian award upon Donald Trump, who in turn promised a $110 billion arms deal in an agreement to jointly combat ISIS. He also pledged $350 billion over the next 10 years and secured some private sector deals that reportedly will create jobs. Trump then joined the king in a traditional sword dance that involved swaying and drumming. Afterwards, he reportedly attended a state dinner where lamb and rice was served alongside steak and ketchup.
I can't even... There's just too much. There's too much. The jobs. The I give you a prize, you give me guns. The $350 billion that results in, like, you know, employment. Like that we're basically are we Sparta now that we just like make the world's guns? Somebody once metaphorically referred to the United States as like the most well-armed insurance company in the world.
I would say we're like global Pinkertons, really.
But that was a metaphor.
It's not a metaphor.
But we do other things. Like, we have a training division, we have HR. I mean, we do other things than just, like, insure the sick and kill people.
We have a dance team, apparently.
Right. But, I mean, no, but genuinely, like, I mean, you know, there's a bunch of schools, and there's a whole ton of innovation that happens here.
Well, there are questions that I've always been afraid...
And not all of it's about killing people.
There's a questions that you and I ask that I've always been afraid to ask on Ask an Atheist, which is, like, how much of Northern Europe's, you know, socialist, you know, healthcare and... you know, socially forward policies are dependent upon American power projection for military stability.
Oh, like that under the umbrella of the fact that Americans are going to come in and going to kill you if you do anything dumb, everybody else gets to do good stuff. Everybody else gets to use their extra money to do good stuff.
Right. And I think in situations like that, the idea of America as a global insurance company or the global Pinkertons, I mean, that's where it's not really a metaphor in that if that's actually true.
Right. Well, the insurance company, I think in the metaphor, and I need to go and source it because now I feel terrible because I'm like yammering on about it and now I don't care.
Source it and then we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
But the insurance company they were referring to is Medicare and Medicaid and healthcare for veterans.
Yeah.
Like the fact that we provide a huge amount of healthcare for people and we provide a huge amount of guns for people and everything else is sort of extraneous sort of below the line asterisk stuff that doesn't show up on the P&L.
Well, if you look at the pie chart of what we spend our money on,
right,
there's some truth to that.
Yeah. But it's not our intention, and it's certainly not how we devote our. It's not how we build our brand.
Like it's certainly not how we see ourselves.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not how we see ourselves. It's not how we sell ourselves.
Right.
Although it is.
Are we sure about that? I think that many people abroad might consider America selling itself as the greatest gun toter in the world.
But we're not talking about gun toting. He's not talking about our force of arms. We export a lot of arms.
Ah.
We protect a lot of, you know, there's a lot of protection going on. Not in protection racket, but there's like a lot of security happening. There's a lot of aid that we hand out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of military, not just military aid, but, you know, food. We export a lot of food,
mm-hmm. Right.
Even to places like North Korea.
Right. Education support, social support, yeah.
Medical support. We do a lot of that. We also tote a lot of guns.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's aside from this. I'm not saying you're wrong about that. People do see us as gun-toting wackos. But that's not the only thing we are.
Well,
especially
in this
situation.
Going to be seen as that less and less when we have things like a 300-some billion-dollar pledge over the next 10 years to supply armaments to other nations, where at the same time we have a hiring freeze at the NIH where we have 300 jobs that literally have no way of being filled until those things. So we're not going to be a provider of healthcare or a stopper of major outbreaks and epidemics. We won't have that kind of health innovation if we keep pledging these things at the expense of the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm. And to bring it back to this, one thing that said in the interview, which I think is really important, and I we've been talking about this, but the current target is Trump. Trump is the current target. He is the face of it. So we need to make the face die. I get it. I understand it. Kill the head, the body dies. I get it. I saw Rocky too. But getting rid of Trump doesn't fix this problem. I want to say all of that. Like, you know, now we have to deal with Pence, who has a lot more on the ball and is actually going to pay attention to a lot of the things that we're hoping to protect, like marriage equality, things mm-hmm. like that. But man, as far as Trump goes, this is the guy who's running our country. And if it's true that you can tell a lot about the person by the company he keeps, let's talk about the people he's publicizing hanging out with. He himself has publicized a lot about hanging out with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who they're not as bad as Chechnya as far as killing gay people, but they're getting there.
You got a Venn diagram there, though. You have the Chechen state that is inside Russia.
Right. You've got a Venn diagram there. He's publicized hanging out with Erdogan in Turkey. And mm-hmm. we all know how that's going. And he's published, and he's making a big deal about hanging out with
China.
Well, mm-hmm. no, he's not actually. He's talking about trade deals with China, but he's not like, look at how on his Twitter feed, how chummy I am with the leader of China.
Oh, you're forgetting the whole chocolate cake debacle.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, so
China's on there.
China's mm-hmm. on the list. And now Saudi Arabia, where they're lashing a guy to death for being an atheist right now. This is the company that he's keeping. These are the people that he's hanging out with. Now, he did go to Israel, but he was like there for like 10 minutes, and now he's spending all his time in...
Oh, and that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
We
could do 3 hours on that alone.
If I can't land my helicopter on the top of Masada, I'm not going.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend 15 minutes there, and since I can't spend... And instead of an hour that other... Or multiple hours that other presidents have spent during their first visits to Israel, and the first time he's ever going to Israel after proclaiming himself to be a friend of Israel, to be going to Masada, and since he can't land his helicopter on a graveyard, he's not going to go.
Dude, I, as an asthmatic, gangly 15-year-old on 2 hours of sleep, could hike up to the top of Masada, right? I think that the least our president could do might be that.
There's a cable car. He doesn't even have to walk. Seriously, he's President Harkonnen.
Yeah.
Does he have his little suspensors that will levitate him to the top?
Yeah.
I guess that's what his helicopter is.
I love it when I don't make Newton references. I just want to make that clear. I love it when other people do it. This has been an insane month.
It's been crazy.
This has been one of the most insane months I have ever seen.
It's day...
Politically.
What is it? Day 117?
Yeah. And I have been paying attention to politics for a very long time, in the hopes of eventually doing precisely what I'm doing right now. And this is the worst. This is not the worst. This is not like our darkest day. This is our weirdest days.
It's like flashing disco ball.
Yeah,
not darkest.
This is our plaid and plaid and polka dot days,
mm-hmm.
where nothing makes sense.
Yeah,
it's our most delirious days.
I was told we would have bread and circuses.
Right.
Where's my bread?
This is my question.
No bread,
just circuses. All circuses all the time.
Oh, I can think of no better place to end. Thank you very much, Ron John. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Ask an Atheist. 844-753-7842 is our phone number. Our website is askanatheist.tv. We are on Facebook. Our Twitter is askanatheistwa. I'd like to thank Gleb Sapersky. This has been... I think it makes sense to have a long episode, just given how much stuff is going on. But I got to think about it. This is just... It's nuts out there. Stay safe. Keep up the good fight. See you next week.
You were this close to like resist.
Yeah.
the what's his name? The Keith Olbermann sign off.
Yeah.
Resist.
Do you want to have Dan?